del mio amato ben perduto in canto, lungi dagli occhi miei, chimera, gloria e vanto. Or per le mute stanze sempre la cerco e chiamo, con pieno il cor di speranze, ma cerco invan, chiamo invan, e il pianger me si caro che di pianto sol nutro il cor. Mi sembra senza lei triste ogni loco, notte mi sembra il giorno, mi sembra gelo il fuoco, se pur talvolta spero di darmi ad altra cura, sol mi tormenta un pensiero, ma senza lei che farò? Mi par così la vita vana cosa senza il mio ben.
That's a longing song by a man named Stefano Donati, who was an Italian composer right on the edge between the Baroque period and the period of this century. And the text was by his brother, and it's a person is wandering through this house looking for their beloved. And they know that their beloved is not there intellectually, but they're still walking from room to room trying to find this person, can't find them, and they're calling out for them.
We're so blessed. And in a way, that's the story of this class, isn't it? The soul's journey. Longing. Thank you so much, Nordine. And I know you maybe, whenever you need...
I have a couple minutes.
Yeah, whenever you need to take leave. I know you have other responsibilities, but I do. So... I'm so filled with gratitude. We sometimes go out to dinner here in Osage Beach together, and we always beseech Nordine to stand up in the restaurant impromptu and sing. Can you imagine how wonderful that is? And he always very humbly offers. Yesterday, all of the kitchen staff stopped cooking and came out and lined up to listen just in awe and stillness. It was lovely. Thank you. A great gift. So, if I would ask you to review let's start. What am I thinking? What are you thinking, Nuria? Reach out and touch someone's hand. Make this world a better place if you can.
There we go.
imagine that we're like a maypole and there are streams of light coming down and touching our hands connected this way from this one and only source. The source upon source, the light upon lights. Streams of light from above. And we say the Sufi invocation of Pir Murshid Inayat Khan. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Feel the stream of light flowing from heart to heart. As we inhale, divine light and life, and we radiate divine light and life and love. Amen. Thank you. So can I ask people to kind of reflect back what you have taken from these last few days together? Yes.
I did pass a test yesterday. And here we have peace, not no peace, but we have rhythm and, I couldn't say it, rhythm and...
Help.
Help. And balance.
And balance.
And balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are two things, and I was so grateful to sit in Sheikh Rahima's class because your whole class has been about balance, so I was happy to get a sip of it today. Thank you. Balance. I would encourage you, I know I've mentioned before, this Hazrat-Inayat-Khan.org. There you can go. There's a search function. So you might want to look up the words rhythm and see what Murshid says again and again about rhythm and balance. And in Rahima's class, it was brought forth about activity and repose. And Murshid gives a beautiful, beautiful teaching on mystic relaxation. Yeah, it's a good study. And one of the things that was also just, may I share that? Is that okay? I'm not saying who said what, but I hope you don't mind. I just kind of want to highlight some of the points that came forth in your class because I think they relate here as well. That sometimes we, we have this tendency that, I think it was you, Sherry or Mina, that you kind of mentioned about the scales. Do you want to talk, can you say that again? It was beautifully articulated.
Well, we were talking about balance, and it seems to me that the picture that comes in my head is always of two opposing things, or two very different things, and that you have the one here and the other here, and you're trying to balance it. But really, I think what came to me was that it should be more like when you use a level and it has that little bubble in there and you adjust just this much. So it's kind of, you always still have both, but you're not creating a duality that's not there.
Yeah, thank you. It's a very beautiful metaphor. And the other thing is that sometimes I think we feel we must reinforce this balance, but if we are skillful, and we do learn that, I think, through retreat, right? you know, mentioned that Pierre Valiant would always tell us when we were in retreat, and it was rather arduous. I mean, Karima Gita and I were reflecting that, you know, we would be up at 5 or 6 in the morning. I mean, we were supposed to be there ready for practice with Pierre Valiant, and then we would go to 9 or 10 at night, and it was rigorous. I mean, we were working constantly on certain visualizations, different forms of the zikr, wazifa, evoking the alchemical states of mind. And so it was a lot of concentration following him, and, you know, the expectation that you'd be there and you'd be sitting still, listening, concentrating, and going along through these different spheres of consciousness with him. But nonetheless, there was a kind of restfulness about that at the same time. The soul was being fed, and there just seemed to always be a good balance, even though in some ways we were active, we were also being receptive. And he would say to us that this was rehearsal for, dress rehearsal for life, that retreat is dress rehearsal for life. And we've heard a lot about that because the theme of our camp is everyday life, our sacred task or responsibility. Anyway.
Huh? Is it opportunity?
It might be opportunity, yeah. Now I can see it. Yeah, I can see it in my mind. Opportunity, thank you. But it is also the task, our dharma, you know, our dharma. So sometimes I find, and you maybe as well, regarding this balance, sometimes we're intensely active. And then when we release that, we can fall into a kind of mystic relaxation. Mercia tells us it comes from great concentration. And when you let go of that relaxation, you naturally fall into that, from that concentration, you naturally, when you release it, you fall into relaxation. It's not something you have to do. And if we practice this again and again, we can become agile at it. We can, in a moment, you know, take a breath, recollect ourselves, and then move forward. So, rhythm and balance. What else did others take away, may I ask? Or any experience with the practice as well? You could talk to that. Yes, Nur Salima.
Just a reminder of the preciousness of this life.
Yeah.
And that we don't want to waste it.
We don't want to waste it. And here's the thing. I really do feel that every morning when we wake up and everything is working, it's such a gift. We need to praise God for all of that. And we were sort of joking again over dinner about the restroom facility in our cabin. And how many times all of us cleaned up pee-pee from around the toilet. And I said, well, we can all be grateful that that's working too. You know what I mean? I mean, that's something to be grateful of. And it was like, Norlim goes, yeah, you know.
One thing you don't know either is I found out there were more than just the people you know that were using it.
I know.
Did you find that out?
I did. We can always blame them, especially since they're not here. Yeah.
Five-year-olds from next door.
At least that way we don't get blamed.
But we learned, well, you weren't here yesterday. We were talking about that Lojong teaching from Buddhism about drive all blame into one or oneself, you know. So we'll take it on, you know. I was thinking, well, it's possible the girls could have sort of done something. I don't know, but anyway. The women.
It is easier for them.
And an over-enthusiastic release could squirt over something. Anyway, my God, let's get ourselves out of the toilet.
Darn.
I know. So, anything else?
On the very first day when you mentioned antidotes to the deadened heart.
Yes.
The heart that had been deadened from grief and sorrow.
Right.
That really spoke to me.
Did it?
And I just came from healing circle, and part of the lesson there is, once again, to get up and do something. Don't worry about people who may be close to transitioning.
Right.
Pray for them.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's another Lojong saying, do something different. Do something different. And if you or anyone you know has had a near-death experience, you know that that transition can be the most beautiful thing to witness. And Alauddin and I were talking about that actually over dinner or lunch. You may know both of his parents passed within a very close period of time last year. And he was sort of talking about those last moments with his father. And somehow that gives comfort to be there, to be attentive to that. And also don't feel bad if you're not, because we know that so many people find it easier to leave when their loved ones are not around. And so they may choose to do that consciously. And so one shouldn't feel like they've missed something or they didn't do something by not being there. Know that you've also given them a gift, and that passing person a gift of your absence, so that they could make that transition in their own way. So, but thank you. Yes, and you know, I think Murshida Darvesh has been sort of indicating to us again and again, you don't have to change anything. If you just be it, it will naturally understand what has benefit has come from that, and it will dissolve, and something else will arise. I mean, I think, don't you think, really, those that were around Jesus, they had to have had great sorrow and great grief, and yet great things also unfolded and spread because of that.
One thing, I think you mentioned.
Speak up, everybody.
Well, I'm not sure what I'm saying, but I know what I'm saying. You mentioned, you actually referred yesterday, and I think maybe days one and two, about the soul, the departing soul actually exchanging or offering or enhancing the coming soul.
Yes.
In other words, there was actually some extraordinary possibility for enhancement between the cycles of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my own word, but that was that concept I never had heard.
Yeah.
And that directly was from the teaching you were quoting.
Yes, it was. It was. I think I have that quote here.
I'm not making it very clear. But
yeah, I think you're making it quite clear. You're restating it in your own words, and it seems very clear. Anything else? Because I will refer to that. I think it's something I have highlighted here, Shanti. Anything else or any clarification that anyone would like?
I just want to say that a long time ago I heard that exact same phrase from a completely different place than this.
Yes.
Which is really interesting.
Oh, do you remember what place that was? Or do you want to share? You don't have to if you
well,
don't
feel. My brother is very intellectual, but his best friend did past life regression.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, I'm going to go get hypnotized just to see what she's talking about. And the first thing that came up is that some of the memories that we might reveal might be because you pick up souls passing, memories of souls passing.
Yeah.
It's like maybe 30 years ago you told me that.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, and I think that that's... Well, I'm not going to elaborate. I'm going to, if it comes back around, I will. Right now, I think it's important to sort of recap some of the key teachings of Ahasuerus and Night Khan over the last few days. And I hope these will become kind of almost as if they're your mantras, sort of going over and over in your head. When the soul has realized itself, when it has realized that it is still living, here I'll say, not dead, after the body drops off, it realizes it's still living, then the clouds of confusion are dispersed, and the soul finds itself together with the atmosphere which it belongs. And again, all souls return to God some with open eyes, some blindly. Every moment of this life is an opportunity whose value is so great that all the pains, all the troubles, all the sorrow of existence would be too small a price for even one moment of life. This precious human life. It's like Kabir said that he learned something from his suffering. There was some great joy in that as well, but one can develop a capacity. So it's a good reminder to me when I see people near and dear to me suffering, that, you know, just stay with it. Be present to what they're experiencing. Be present to my own discomfort about what they might be experiencing. Just keep loving. And just be present. Be present. The condition of the soul can turn any place into heaven. Not only the earth, but even hell could be turned into heaven if only the soul attained the perfection, which is its only goal. We came down, you know, drove down, and the closer we get to the Ozarks, the more curious I think we become to people. You know, it's Karina, Gita, Savitri, and myself in the car, and it's kind of amazing to me. You know, it's kind of that whole place will stop and kind of look and then follow us with their eyes if we've entered a little store or a little restaurant or anything. But it's always interesting. They kind of want to know what's up, you know. So they'll find a way to start a conversation. This happened in the McDonald's. One of the workers, I think, was a little bit captivated, interested, curious, whatever the case may be. She followed us into the bathroom. She didn't really have any responsibility in there at the moment. But she wanted to know about our shawls and where we were from and where we were headed. And, you know, a little bit of heaven right there in the girls' restroom, you know, just chatting. You know, chatting it up with another woman. It was fun. And that happens frequently. We have a friend at this McDonald's up here who recognizes us from year to year, you know. We always try to find a reason to stop, even if we don't really want anything. But she's a very cool person. And we used to have a regular waitress at the Outback, excuse me, vegetarians, but we only eat salads there. And the bloomin' onion. Nothing that we really value can put we can we excuse me nothing that we really value can we put off till tomorrow. What one puts off, one does not value enough. Wherever, isn't it, wherever your treasure is, there you'll also find your heart. That's the quote. Anyone know that biblical quote?
Yeah, it says don't put your treasure where it will get moldy and rotten.
Yeah.
Because your heart is there.
Your heart is there, yeah. On day two, we heard this. Well, first of all, let's go back because I got to really keep an eye on time. Let's do just the first day we did the practice, Yahai. And as Jem pointed out, it was one of the quotes was that it is the antidote to the heart that is deadened by sorrow and grief, but also reading from the Physicians of the Heart, it is said, it's the perfection of everlasting life, the only one who truly lives. Yahai is filled with vitality. It is the inner life of the heart. So think of this vitality, this upliftment, this source of everlasting life. And we'll just do this one in the same manner in which we do the longer recitations, but we'll do 33. 11 aloud with Yah, 11 whispered, and 11 just breathing in and out on the breath. Okay, so let's take a strong exhalation. And we breathe in. Yahai! 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 Yahai!
Yahai!
Yahai!
On the breath. So I want to say one thing. I want to be sure it's on the recorder. When you're at home alone, you know, you can if you have the opportunity to say these loud and forceful, but you can hear the inner sound, you know? Or, I mean, when I do these practices a lot, you know, I think it's better to tether the mind to the practices than other things, idle thoughts, so... You know, I'm not going to do them when I'm standing in the grocery store line or, you know, when I'm walking from one class to another or whatever at the college. It's just, you know, but you can make yourself mindful on the breath and your steps and just sort of hear that sound internally. I remember, it's been quite some time, but Pir Shabda told this story about... he was at the Mentor Garden, and Murshid Sam, his teacher, heard him out there just doing these practices so loud. And he said, you know, Shabda, Murshid Sam, you know, Shabda, God hears you, even if you're softer than that, you know. So it was a good lesson, because he thought the louder it was, the better it was. So it doesn't have to be like that. But I want to give you the idea of what it's doing to your breath and also this center. You know, it can break up the congestion in this center. They say until this center is awakened, this solar plexus, the seat of intuition isn't really awakened. And this is kind of, again, as Murshida Vira would describe it, it's the deep heart. It's the deep heart. And that's why we often feel things in our gut, you know. So it's good to kind of break up that congestion. Murshida Vira also talked about the wazifa, like the speaking aloud and then the whisper and then the silence was like, you know, like setting the nail in a way. And then you keep tap, tap, tapping, and then it gets softer as you're getting it just in place. So it's kind of like that, you know. The other thing she always talked about was the use of the prayer bead. She would also often hold it consciously at her heart or her solar plexus and draw the bead towards you. His Holiness also gives that instruction of bringing the bead towards you. And he always rolls the beads like this, and then he goes very strong. He talks about that in terms of a kind of diligence and a control, controlling the ego. Little tips from the truly wise ones. But, you know, being mindful of our actions, having a means of balancing us also and giving us a kind of repose in everyday life. You know, just being mindful of what it feels like to pick up the glasses and put them on. You know, or when someone's talking to you, you know, really turning to them and looking at them and listening for a moment. You know, just that can give repose just in our activity. Any comments or questions on that? I always tell my college students when I met with dead silence, then you must have a really good teacher. It all must be very clear. I'll move on then. From day two. The souls which have passed away are nearer to us in one way than those on earth, but in another way they are further. They are nearer in the one way that if they want to get in contact with us, or we with them, it is more easily done than with the souls on the earth. But when we look at the difference between the plane on which they live and our plane, they are further than those on the earth because there is no means of communication here. So it's like, you know, you can't pick up the telephone or email someone. It's a matter of tuning into their beingness and being receptive. We're used to that, really. If you think about it, we do. We invoke our teachers. We invoke, you know, the masters, saints, and prophets. You know, sometimes as one study, you take up the concentration of a particular being and tune your being in the manner of that being. It's like that. If you haven't done it as a practice, perhaps ask your guide. It's a good practice, really good practice, to tune in that way. To create happiness for oneself and others, therein lie the whole of religion and the whole of philosophy. That to me is really very significant. To create happiness for oneself and others, therein lie the whole of religion and the whole of philosophy. And it's beautiful. And that day, I think I did try to again remind us that I think sometimes we try to take Sufism and make it a religion, and it's not. We've clearly, again and again, I know Anayat Khan says that, you know. And I know that, you know, we had the great good fortune in March to be in Turkey, and Joe and I were quite determined on the first day there to meet with the dervishes in Istanbul. There was the turning, and I will tell you, it was the most lovely experience to witness. Absolute, sublime, exquisite prayer in motion. And it was as if the individuality, it was like that question you had, Rahim, about the individual and the unindividuated self and the individuated self. In this instance, they could have been short or tall or thin or more robust, but in that moment, those moments of turning, you couldn't distinguish one from another. There was such perfect balance and rhythm. And nothing of the personality was there. It's absolutely exquisite. And also connected with that, you know, if you read Rumi, or there is a wonderful, albeit I will say challenging, biography of Shamsa Tabriz, Rumi's teacher. And the reason I say it's challenging to read, it's because it's conversations he's having with people, and he often will change tense. So if he's, you know, sort of in a unit of state, he'll be speaking in one way, and then when he's more in an individuated way, and it's a little bit, you know, like who's talking to who, which is also very interesting to study, you know, just from that point of view and tune to and follow. But in that time, at least, there was such a clear distinction between, or a definition of Sufism, which was clearly a discipline of study, but it was the psychology. It was considered psychology, not religion. It was the psychology of religion, but it wasn't the religion. And then one of the dervishes in Istanbul we met, it was a magical tale, which one of these days, when we have the subject of magical tales, you'll hear it. But we were walking together, and he said, are you Christian? And I said, well, I was raised Catholic, and I study Buddhism and Sufism and other world religions. And he said, I'm Muslim, but truly no difference. He said, one's Christian, one's Jew, one's Muslim, one's this. And he said, the truth is, it's like all the fingers on the hand lead to the arm, which lead to the heart. And that's what the essence of all religion is, which is what Anay Khan said. If Sufism could be called any religion, it's the religion of the heart. And as Kabir said today, it's almost as if it's... the only ones that really deserve to be called Sufis are the truly, you know, realized beings, the saints, you know. We aspire, so we'll call ourselves Sufis, inshallah. To create happiness for oneself and others, therein lie the whole of religion and the whole of philosophy. And Shanti, this was your what you were talking about, the meeting of a soul going towards manifestation and a soul returning from there may be unconscious. Also, a soul going towards the earth cannot ask for advice or help from the returning soul because his mind has not become like that of a human being. He is passive. What he receives, he gets without asking. So there's that suggestion that there can indeed be a transference of knowledge, but it's not, oh, I want to go and learn this thing. It just happens. And in an earlier part of the teaching, they were also Murshid was also speaking about the idea that God's kind of throwing these darts, and they sometimes land at different destinations. But every once in a while, it goes further even than the intended destination. And this, we could say, is like those beings that have advanced us in some way in our understanding, or those beings that return again to keep advancing us, or the teachings that are living and advance us. So those are like those far-reaching, as Shanti Dave would say, the far-reaching thoughts of bodhicitta. But it's as if the work perhaps hasn't been completed, and so the blank, passive soul can receive some knowledge that might inspire them in their life's work. It's beautiful to think about it. You know, you think of the soul as, it gives a whole new dimension to what it is to have a soul, to be a soul. There is no condition of having to go to God through the outer death, the condition which is called fana. It is no crucifixion, for God is nearer to them than anything else. And again, we talked about, you know, that little beautiful story of walking on the beach, and you see two footprints in the two sets of footprints in the sand, and when one goes through a difficult time, and one might look and only see one set of footprints, but that's when God says, that's when I was carrying you. Or like in The Dark Night of the Soul, you know, I think another analogy that St. John gives us is it's like the brightness of the sunlight in the eye of the owl. Imagine what that would do, right? That's kind of what we're experiencing, and because of that, then we're in utter darkness. Or we think we are, but we're actually basking in intense light. We're just trying to catch up. When I go to Dharamsala and have the good fortune of sitting with His Holiness, a lot of times it's happened that I've kind of had an overwhelming kind of fatigue, or sometimes illness can overcome me. And I'm also very fortunate because I had an experience some years ago while there. I really honestly think they were afraid that an American would die there and it would create an incident, you know. So some of the monks ran to the private office of His Holiness and said, please, you have to help. And so he sent his private physician. And so as a result, I have the blessing of connection with this great Lama, who's also a physician and does a lot of work in America. He's written a book on healing. His name is Dr. Yeshe Dondon. Some of you may know him, or have heard that name. He's done great advancements with certain forms of cancer with Tibetan medicine. Again, balance. It's about balancing the elements in the body. A reason to do our elemental breaths, by the way. But he says that, you know, while, and I'm relating this to The Dark Knight, it's something personal, but it's something very real for me. He'll often just kind of pat my hand like, okay, it's happened again. Your mind has gone here and your body is growing weary trying to catch up. So you have to go into repose. Sometimes we do have to rest down. So that is something Murshid Aviri used to talk about, these different bodies. The physical body, the emotional body, the body of our passions, the intellectual body, and the spiritual body. And she would, you know, blessings of being near her frequently, and she'd say, you know, Nuria, maybe it's just being a redhead, but I just wish I could just get some of this fire out of me and just be a nice old lady, you know. She realized that her emotional body, or that the body of the passions, maybe still had some ways to go. And we see that in ourselves. Sometimes we have an intellectual advancement, yet it hasn't integrated into our spiritual world and understanding, or in our physical body, or we haven't integrated it emotionally. You know, we sort of know something, but then it's like, but do we really feel it? So be aware that these things are always at interplay. And of course, the goal is to find that balance, to bring things into alignment, but sometimes they're not. And you can see some people that are brilliant in one way and just are not very functional in other ways. This is, you know, pray for them. Pray for yourself. First of all, pray for the beautiful example you've been given through another. Don't judge, just discern, notice, and think, this is, you know, this what can be done to align, and in what ways am I doing that same thing? There is no condition of having to go to God through the outer death. The condition which the Sufis call fana is no crucifixion, for God is nearer to them than anything else. And one more quote from that day, and then I'd like for us to do the practice together. The joy of life is the joy of the journey. The whole joy is in the journey. In the journey. You know, and Murshida Asha is often reminding us, it's just right here, right now. There's no place to go. There's no place to be. There's nothing to do. Attentive to each moment. It's truly in my greatest moments of despair that I'm reminded of that. I find that if I reside in the moment, then I'm not thinking about all the woulda, shoulda, couldas, and I'm not anticipating about will I be making the right step or the next step or whatever. It's right here, just feeling what's happening in this moment, and then there's the next moment. And so we talked about the practice of Yahai, Yakayum. There are a few people that said they were accustomed to doing the practice as Yahayo, Yakayum. That's fine. You know, we talked about that O at the end of the practice as like a continuum, and you can bridge them together in a lot of Wisefas and in certain dialects. And you know that Sheikh al-Mashaikh in the Sufi movement, he's the nephew of Inayat Khan. His father took over the organization after Inayat Khan. He was the next successor. But he often gives all variety of wazifas with the oh, whoa, whoa, with the sound. So it is not a right or a wrong way. It's intention. It's what's in your heart. So Yahai is like that life force, that spark. And Qayyum is this eternal life. So we meet the finite in the infinite. We meet that moment between the in-breath and the out-breath. We meet this kind of gap. Another thing, Pir Vilayat's here today. When he would give I don't know if he did it for everyone, but he did for me, and I think it's a beautiful practice. If you do the alternate nostril breathing practice, he had said, think of the left nostril drawing all things in from the past into the eternal moment. And as you breathe out, this is the opposite of what I just said, thinking of the past and the future, but you'll see the value of it. And as you breathe out the eternal moment into the future. And as you breathe in your knowledge and wisdom from the future into the present moment. And you breathe out in the past, transforming what was. Is that like spectacular or what? Did you get it?
This is not a sutra.
Yeah.
Left and right.
Yeah, so breathing in from the left, you consider, and you could do it with a particular situation in one's life, or general conditions or patterns that one has, that one wishes to transform the energy of that and, heal it and bring it again into balance. Do you want to do it a little bit with me?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to breathe in through the left nostril to the count of four. This is, again, past to present eternal moment. We'll hold the breath for a gap of eight, and then we'll breathe out to the count of four on the right, as if we're projecting ourselves into the future. When we breathe back in from the right, we're bringing knowledge and wisdom. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Well, we're getting it, we're gathering it now. And we're bringing it into the present moment, the eternal moment, actually. Feel the spaciousness of that. And as we breathe out to the left, we're transforming the past. Okay, take a breath out. Breathe in from the left. Hold. Out right, in right, hold, breathe out left, in left, hold. Out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left. Now breathe in from both streams through your nostrils, past and future, and then we'll hold again, the eternal moment, and then we breathe out again through both nostrils. So let's breathe in both, hold, out both. In both, past and the present meet in the eternal moment. Hold, out, in, hold, out, in. Hold, out, in, hold, out, in, hold, out. Now just sit for a few moments. Notice the body sensations, notice the feeling heart, notice the thinking mind, just awareness, presence. Thank you for your concentration. And do ask your teachers about this practice. This can be given to transform negative energies. This can be done in accordance with the chakras. This can be done in so many different ways. There's so many variables. It's a vast study. You can also look on Hazarat-Anayat-Khan.org and look up Murshid's teachings on Jamal, J-E-M-A-L, and Jalal, J-E-L-A-L, and Kamal, K-E-M-A-L. So the Jamal is the sort of this feminine principle as we breathe in through the left. And when we hold, it's that Kamalic point of perfection, the union, like last night, in the puja, the union of the masculine and feminine, the union of the cosmic as well as individuated beingness in union. So it's like that. We hear it again and again in all the different traditions in different ways. In Sufic terminology, it's Jamal is the feminine, Kamal is that perfect stillness, the eternal moment, and Jalal is more the masculine principle or the active principle, receptive and active and stillness. So these things are very good to know and understand. They're also very helpful for public speaking if you have to, for healing. One of the things Murshida Vira said, and believe me, I've spent a lot of time over the last few months in hospitals and nursing homes, she said, always check your breath. If you're in the left nostril, change the breath to the right nostril. When you enter into a place of illness, you don't want to be receptive. Again, the left nostril, the Jamal. You want to radiate. You want to radiate light and love. That's the right nostril. Remember those teachings? Those that were here? Murshida Vira was very clear and a master of that. Yes.
You talked about the website, but on the Sufi movement,
yes,
a number of years ago, and I don't know if the archives are
they're all up to date.
No, but you gave a teaching.
I did.
The very
point.
Ago, and it's, you can get it right online.
Yeah, right there, anytime. SufiMovement.us. You go under the teaching section. There's a huge archives of our, with these audio files, but also audio and video. So it's a pretty comprehensive, it's not intended, the website was never intended as a bulletin board. We don't use it in that way. We do try to make Sufism available. And we know that Amina would not be here without having found that website, correct? And we know that Rahim and Clarence would not be here without having found that website. And we know so many of our friends around the world in Kenya and China that now we know intimately through our virtual Mirid circle, we wouldn't know. They wouldn't. And the other interesting thing is I can look at my statistics on the website, and there's so many people from these very strong sort of traditional, I'll say, or orthodox Muslim traditions who are looking for a more moderate path, and they find it. So we have two practitioners, one from India and one from Kenya, that are like that, and they have been seeking something. It's not like they want to turn away from their root religion, but they feel there's something more than just the you know, it's like all of us might feel that way to a certain extent about our root religions. Like we were asked to follow a kind of dogma, but we were seeking experience, and that brought us to Sufism. And from that, sometimes that turns us back to our root religion as well, with a greater understanding or an illuminated affection towards that root tradition. So there are people like that that have found us. It's been quite an extraordinary outreach. So there's a lot available. There's a lot of information about the Sufi teachings of Inayat Khan and the five activities that he created, the brotherhood, sisterhood work, the healing work, the universal worship, the inner esoteric school. There are a lot of teachings out there about discipleship and the inner work, and then what in the Sufi movement is called the symbology activity, but that includes Zarat as well, which Murshida Darvesha has brought to this camp. So it's, you know, we don't proselytize, but if you want to be on the mail list, you can easily join through the website, and we send you out things, even like about this camp, right? Come on and join us. So we send out monthly messages on the unity of religious ideals. It gives you such a wonderful feeling when you see, oh my gosh, in this month, all these traditions are celebrating something, you know, and you get that interconnectedness. Yeah, I know, Sakina, I think you're on our list, yeah? You've, or at least you're visiting us. So. Anyway, but I don't know if you're, I don't know your IP address, so I won't know individually unless you tell me. I'm not that much of a mastermind of technology. So. It's the stillness. It's stillness. And sometimes it's even described as death, but it's fana. It's the a moment of annihilation before rebirth, if you might want to say that way, which we're kind of getting an idea that maybe Merchant's telling us something about the evolution of the soul. Okay?
Isn't the Kamal in the holding of the breath?
It's in the holding of the breath. Yes, thank you, Karima Gita. So then we went on. Shall I move on, or are there more questions? Yes.
When you're doing that breath practice, you said to breathe out before the into the future. We don't have a set future. So
you have the future of infinite possibilities, of absolute emptiness. It's just that you going towards it's not predictable, but there are an infinite number of possibilities. You can either choose one or let it come to you. It's best to be receptive.
So just leave it open.
Leave it open.
I just wanted to comment because...
It's faith. It's a kind of faith. It's not something we understand with our mind. It's we experience it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Charles?
For me, the past and the future... One can't exist without the other. So if I'm asked to look at my past, I have to acknowledge that there's a future. It's that simple. Otherwise, you know what I mean? You just can't have one without the other. So, and I do have a past, sort of, kind of. You know, I mean, it does affect me. And so therefore, my heart tells me, well, then I want the future to be, even though I can't predict it. Because I do have a past to look into, then I have hope for the future.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, in a real calm state when I'm in the now, neither of those two things matter. But I'm a person, not a saint or whatever, you know, mystic. So I'll get there someday.
Yeah, we're already there. We just don't know it.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I really do think it's true, and that's that kind, that sense of humility. Murshid actually refers to as vanity. You'll find that very interesting. That being, it's good to have humility, of course. But if it turns into this way of behaving, it's actually vanity. You know, it's like looking at oneself about how good and holy and unworthy. You know, that's a script. That can be a script. And he talks about the ego having those two sides, either, you know, pride or this, you know, the vanity of humility. So it's like, what's the balance again? What's the balance?
And the breath practice that you did so beautifully, I think, illustrated what Amina described in that bubble.
Yes, that's exact. That's wonderful. Thank you for bringing that back. Well, I think we should all bring levelers from now on. We can adjust each other's and... Souls that are not in tune will enter the angelic heavens. For those that you weren't here, you might want to really pay attention. This will rock your world. Souls that are not in tune will enter the angelic heavens all the same. Even in heaven, there is no peace. The inharmonious people will follow the harmonious ones even there. One soul is more harmonious than the other, but in the music of the heavens, they will all fit in. Just as in our music, we would not want everything to be alike. And Murshid also gives this great teaching on what would it be like if we all had the same face.
Ew.
Yeah. And he said, if we want everyone to be like us, we would never learn, or we would never recognize one being from another. It's so important that we have this diversity in unity.
There's hope for us.
There is. Yes. One soul is more harmonious than the other, but in the music of the heavens, they all fit in. Just as in our music, we would not want everything to be alike. And the souls who are still out of rhythm will continue to have the choice. The souls who are still out of rhythm will continue to have the choice of becoming harmonious. So even in heaven, there's, according to Murshid at least, there's still evolution. There's the possibility for that. For there is a choice at every step in the heavens too. Life is progressive, and that is why there is always hope of improvement. There's always hope of improvement. Hope and faith. And we also talked there about the fact, you know, sometimes do you feel like you just attract trouble? Well, you don't know, maybe that's your purpose, is to transform that trouble. And maybe those troublesome people are drawn to you because they're wanting to learn something. It could be, it's like most things. It's a blessing and a curse. Yeah? And instead of thinking, oh, why am I attracting all this to me? You could say, well, I must be very harmonious and I'm just needing to offer some balance and solace to someone. And then I think I said something like, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says his religion is simple, it's kindness, being kind. Yeah. Yes.
I think that attracting trouble, like you say, is part of stepping up to the plate, taking responsibility, being a leader.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I find myself saying, oh, God, why did I volunteer for that now?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, I did it because I wanted to, I wanted to contribute. And trouble may have come along with that.
And it comes, that's exactly right. Problem solving and sort of resolving conflicts. It is certainly part of that. And, you know, the more bright one becomes, the clearer the target might become, too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I heard a really good idea about that, that I think it was Fritos, he told us that if you had a football field that was empty and you went out into it and you could have any space you wanted, and so you went down the 50-yard line in the center and said, right, I want this space. And there could be stands of people. But the minute that you make a demarcation that says, this is my space, then that's when everybody wants to come in there. And they may not have cared at all before. So you make a boundary and you kind of go, hey, over here.
Yeah, that's right. It is very true. Or in the case of the Sabato girls, which I call us, my mom, my sister, and I, we go into a shop. It's like I always tell people, you need to hire us to shop, because there might not be anyone in that shop. And as soon as we go touch something and notice it, everybody wants that thing, you know? It's like, you better buy it now, or somebody else is going to come right behind you and buy it. Don't put it back. You know, it's like you put your energy in it, too, you know?
You're not looking at anything in front. Someone's looking at something intensely. You go over to see what they're looking at.
But exactly. Yeah, just you can do that. Just stare in the. Have you ever done that?
Yeah, you look up in there.
Yeah. Okay. So this is talking about the harmonious and inharmonious vibrations, but that the soul is progressive, life is progressive, and we do have a choice to continuously improve. And then he goes on to say, if a link of sympathy exists, then the light of those who are well-wishers. Either in the sphere of the jinns, and that's a whole other level of existence. Murshid Avir would call that the realm of genius. Okay. Or in the angelic heavens, will certainly be thrown upon those on the earth. Their love and tenderness, these beings, their souls, their love and tenderness and goodness shine upon those on the earth just like the love and the tenderness and goodness of parents towards children. In short, illuminated souls in whatever sphere, they are willing to show their light. You know, pour upon us thy love and thy light. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. Pour upon us thy love and thy light. So let's take just one little step back. Yesterday we did the together, those that were here in the morning, the practice with High Qayyum. We haven't done that today, right? Okay. So I started to, and then I went back to the reading. But let's do High Qayyum. And again, let's just do this one 11 times, because we'll have another practice before the end. And again, that divine life, everlasting life. And that's when we went into the practice of the breath, that eternal moment. So breathe out and breathe in. Yahai, Yah Qayyum. 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 Now whispering, breathe in, hi, and out, Qayyum. Hi, 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 Qayyum. Continue with the breath silently. Feel the presence of life in this breath, in this moment, in your life, and at the same time, the awareness of the eternal present. It's beautiful if you do this walking. You don't have to even say the wazifa, but if you keep your glance, you know, like Murshid said, if you, somebody maybe can help me with the quote about, as one approaches the horizon moves still further. So if you do that as a practice where you keep your eye in the distance, you'll feel as if you're walking towards an eternal moment, and at the same time in your periphery, in a way it's kind of a Dzogchen practice, too bad Marty's not here, but it's you see all of those things that are temporal just passing by while you're concentrating on the eternal. It just moves by. It's a very beautiful practice, but it helps us be mindful of how these things are always with us. The moment and eternity at the same time. These are qualities of the soul. And then we did the practice together, Yanur Yamunawar. And of course, Nur is the light that radiates from within all things. It's self-illuminating awareness. And Munawar is the one that is illuminated, or the one that assists in illumination. Let's just do that 11 times aloud. Yanur Yamunawar. Yanur Yamunawar. Yanur Yamunawar. Yanur Yamunawar. Anyone that feels they must leave, please feel free to do so. I do want to read this last little bit of teaching. It's only like a couple paragraphs, but it's important. I think it is, at least, as a way of closing this teaching. The soul is continually on the way towards improvement. Therefore, even in the angelic world, the soul is not quite perfect. The perfection is in the goal, not in the soul. I love that. Murshid gave a very clever phrase there, didn't he? The perfection is in the goal, not in the soul. So it's this striving, this improvement, this moving towards greater balance and greater harmony it's the goal. That's the greater perfection. You know, it's not like we've arrived somewhere. There's still more to go, like the horizon. Okay. In a way, there is a difference in the degree and experience of happiness of the soul going towards manifestation and of a soul returning. But the difference is like that of notes in music. This applies particularly to the souls returning to the goal who have acquired something from earth or from the sphere of the jinns, which has influenced the tone and rhythm of their being. And therefore, they, so to speak, tell the legend of their past in the music that they make in the heavens of the angels. It's so beautiful, you know? It's like the soul's continually being ornamented, you might say, in a beautiful way by the things that we've learned or the beings that we've touched or, you know, the beautiful things that we've acquired. It's like this beautiful ornamentation on this, what was blank when it came. And as we return, we can then offer this to other beings and we can contribute to the music of the spheres. The soul, while being a current, there is a relationship between the bodies of the souls on the different planes because they borrow their body from the clay of the plane where they are. And from that comes the connection caused by the clay or matter of that plane. So, you know, maybe we become too attached to this thing, too identified with this thing. You know, I'm a female, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a, you know, whatever. But that's because we've gotten attached to the substance of that plane. But what if we existed on all, could connect with all the different planes and make our music just fantastic at multiple layers and like the overtones, you know? It's not the single note. Marcia talks about, oh my God, how boring would it be to just play that same note on the piano? Bang, 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 bang. Have you had a child ever do that?
Yeah.
Just do something different, right? Okay. The soul, while being a current, has two kinds of atoms, physical and mental. Okay, now again, I'm going to... Were you reading from the mind, mental purification? Yes, and the mind world? Yeah. That is so important because this is the thing that I think teaches us the urgency of practice, because their Murshid's indicating to us that at the moment we lose this outer garb, this clay, what's going to exist is the soul, but the soul is going to have the impressions of what we've gathered around us. It was also somewhat in this teaching. But the practices will hopefully be the vibrations that we carry into that mental realm, not the confused or clouded thoughts or whatever else might be there. That's why it's good to pray. You know, The Way of the Pilgrim. You all read that book? It's such a sweet little book. In that, it's like, pray unceasingly. Pray unceasingly. Pray unceasingly. The Way of the Pilgrim. That was his deal. Okay. Beautiful. So the soul goes on living. It lives no longer. It lives longer. Excuse me. It goes on living, it lives longer than the physical body. Life is limited for the very reason that the substance is limited. Mind and feeling have their own life. Mind and feeling have their own life. Yeah. And isn't it true you make things more real and you can make them very concrete and it's just a fabrication of or an interpretation of reality? It doesn't really have anything to do with reality. Love the quote in Buddhism, things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. Such a great quote to contemplate. Things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise, the two truths. Mind and feeling have their own life. They do not belong to the brain, but to the original condition. That is why the mind lives longer than the body. Watch your thoughts. That's also a practice. Watch your thoughts. Be mindful of your thoughts. You know, the hereafter means living in the inner garb. So what's that inner world? What are the things that you hold dear? What are the things that are coming from within? One still continues one's life in the hereafter because the soul is consciousness itself. It's consciousness itself. It's consciousness itself. So as a closing practice, let's do this line from the prayer that says, it's our morning prayer, and it's, draw us closer to thee every moment of our life, not lives, life, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. Now think about that. Murshid had teachings on the five elements. He had teachings on the five activities. This number five is significant. So think about these different planes of existence also. And perhaps thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace as giving us a kind of roadmap. Okay? And you can change the phrase if you wish. Personally, I would ask you, at least those that I'm working with more intimately on the path, not to start to mix up the words of the prayers and make them new because it's accommodating. Murshid asked us not to do that, and I would like to respect that. I think if you want to be creative with the prayers, that's something. That's very good. As long as one be sure where the original source is and that people are aware of that original source. So, let's chant this. Draw us closer to thee every moment of our life, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. Or you could say, draw me closer to thee every moment of my life, until in me be reflected Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. One more time. Draw me closer to Thee every moment of my life, until in me be reflected Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. May all beings have the opportunity to meet with kind and holy teachers. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings be blessed with the peace and grace of great equanimity. Soha.